This interview was recorded for the International Bomber Command Centre Digital Archive, which owns the copyright for this performance.
Right, I'm interviewing Lawrence Clark Rogers at in Huddersfield, and it's the 22nd of August 2016 at 8:30 p.m. and we're into the interviewer's home. Lawrence, could you tell me a little bit about your life and how it is with the RAF?
Yes, I think if I can remember, I will tell you, of course. But school, I went to school, and I wasn't over keen on school at all. But I decided at age of 17 that I knew that I would be called up, so I didn't want to go in the Navy. I can't swim. I didn't want to go in the Army, so I thought, right, I'll go in the Air Force. So I went down to the drill hall in Huddersfield and volunteered. I told my father, I told my mother, who wasn't at all pleased, but she said she would all right in the Air Force as long as I didn't fly, which I promised. And from there on, I went to West Kirby, near Liverpool, and I was there for the training. I remember the time when we first joined, when we first entered there, we got a good meal, and then the day after we were signed in, and the sergeant who took us out said, "Now you've not got a name, you've got a B number." So we did quite a lot of drill there on the parade ground. The aircraft engine in the distance was going, so the all the shouting, this, that, the other. And from there, I went to Wigtown in Scotland, where I was an instructor. I went first of all because I'd signed up for a wireless operator. When I volunteered, they asked for volunteers, and we put our names up, our hands up, and we went to Blackpool for the wireless. Did our drill on the bottom prom, all the holidaymakers on the top prom watching us, and then we went to Gatesbury, which was the station for air crew, and we did the radio wireless training there, and then from there I got posted to Wigtown. I think I've got to have to contact a little Wigtown in Scotland. I was there, posted there as an instructor on wireless operating. This went quite normally. It was a nice station. They provided us with a bicycle, and the food wasn't too bad. And we flew in Anson's, and on one trip, which it was usually from Wigtown down to Anglesey and back all the time, most of the time. Then they sent us up north a bit, and we got a recall. It was a bad day. We got a recall, and he asked the navigator, pupil navigator, where we were, and he didn't seem to know. So the pilot said, "I'll fly 5 minutes west and then come down over the sea." We flew 5 minutes west. We didn't come down in the sea. We crashed in Cainsborough Fleet. I think they called it Pibble Hill, the place where we crashed. We were there for quite a while, in cloud, probably 24 hours, something like that, till the clouds broke in the morning. And I was flashing, there was aircraft about, I was flashing my oldest lamp, and I couldn't transmit, but I could receive. It had been damaged on the aircraft. If we'd have missed this part where we should have, where we did crash, when missed that, we'd have gone nose first into higher mountain just further on. But anyhow, that didn't happen. The group captain came over in his Tiger Moth, and dropped us a big parcel of food, which was, I don't know, cheese sandwich in which must have been, I don't know how thick, in two big slices of bread. It's terrible. Anyhow, later on, after a few hours, they climbed up the and brought us down. We didn't get survivor's leave. I don't know why, but we didn't. Anyhow, I was stationed there for 2 years, actually, and we tried our best to get down to be on the squadron. Eventually, we were sent to OTU, I think it was Chedborough, and from there, we were posted to 218 Gold Coast Squadron, Woolfolk's Lodge. I did about nine operations from there, and then we lost our pilot. He had an accident, not a flying accident, but an accident on the road, and we were transferred to 75 New Zealand Squadron. We were approached by a squadron leader. We were given a new pilot, Squadron Leader Rogers, a New Zealand pilot. And he was in charge of, I think it was AA Group. We got all the dirty jobs, of course. He used to pass us, you light the fire and this, that, the other, and those things. I presume he didn't want to delegate too much, and we did the rest of the operations there. I did 32, if I remember correctly, operations, because I had to do two operations with another pilot who hadn't got a wireless operator. And on the 30th operation of mine, I could have packed in, but the crew wanted me to carry on and do the up to the 30th. So I did two more, of course, which I did 32. From there, we were posted down to London to go overseas. And they messed us around quite a bit. First, we were going to sail over there, and then they decided we were going to fly from there. I mean, I can't remember the place where we flew from, but we flew from there to Karachi. And I was stationed in Karachi for quite a while the first job I was doing. But the second job was coming when we were posted to Singapore, just before the capitulation by the Japanese. We went by landing craft, which was going back to Australia, and we landed in Singapore roughly on the same day as the capitulation came up. And I was a accommodation officer, one of the forward. I went over in a landing craft that was going back with 24 drivers and escorts doing the japatis on the desk and on the deck and things like that. I met a good friend from Pocklington. I've forgotten his name now. Oh dear. Anyhow, we were together in India all the time, and I wasn't there too long, actually. We sailed back to England. I don't know. If I remember correctly, it was after the capitulation by Germany, and after the VJ Day as well. And whilst I was there in Singapore, it was arranged between Audrey and myself, my late wife, that we should get married, and we came back to Huddersfield. And from there, I got two or three different intervals, because I didn't want to go back to the job where I was, which was a travel agent. But we had two or three interviews, I had two or three different jobs, short jobs, 2 or 3 weeks jobs. And then I got a choice of jobs between textiles again and engineering. I decided to go in for engineering, and I worked at the engineering firm, which was W.C. Holmes at that time in Huddersfield, for 32 years, I think it was, something like that anyhow. And I retired there at 64, redundancy. I'd been trying for a redundancy since I was 60, and at 64 I got it. New director came up, which was very friendly with me, and he called me to the office. He said, "Lawrence, do you want to be made redundant?" I said, "Yes, please." He said, "You'll be first on the list tomorrow," which I was. And since then, I've had a great retirement. I still drive at my age of 94. I still play bowls for the league. and I play snooker for the league also. And I've really enjoyed my retirement. I've been retired now 30 years, I think it is. And I've got 4 grandchildren and 7 great-grandchildren. And we're quite a happy family. I wanted my eldest son, Graham, to go down and go inside the Lancaster. My wife went with me down to Hendon years ago, and they allowed us to go in. I wrote to the people first, and they said, just make yourself at home. But when I went down to Hendon again, they wouldn't let us go in out of the aircraft at all. But they did put a platform up so that we could go up and look in through the pilot's window. But we couldn't see where the wireless operator was, of course. And just shortly after that, my son got very ill, had a major operation, and he died some 10 weeks ago, 10th of June this year. And I've now got 2 great-granddaughters that look after me. They do. They really look after me. I have a youngest son who now lives in Wales. I get invited down there for him, and he comes up here regularly, reasonably regularly, anyhow. And he's a very good son. Just no distinguishing between the two, really. And I treated them both the same. And that's about it. I'm still here. There we are. There was one incident whilst I was in the Air Force that I was home on leave, and I was on a squadron at the time, and I met my friend at the bus stop as I was going back off leave, Kenneth Richardson, they call him, and I didn't know, but he joined the RAF, and he joined the Bomber Command, and he went out, I don't know whether it was his first or his second trip, but he never returned, and he's never been found as far as I know anyhow. And I would have liked to know what happened to him, but it's a long time ago, and there we are. Just another addition, that I was just looking at the photograph of my crew in front of the Lancaster. There was George, who was a Cockney from London. He was the oldest man of the crew. Next was Ron Brown, who was a flight engineer and a very good friend of mine. Even after the war, we used to see each other and visit each other. Then there was Brian, who came from Birmingham. He was a joker of the family. I mean, at one time we were in the station going back off leave, and he went up to this woman and asked her how she got a fur coat. But that's beside the point. Harry was the pilot, Harry Sheldon. He lived in Nottingham. He was a nice fella. He moved to Canada, and he's since died. As you know, Ron has also passed away. Next one, well, is myself. And then there was Tom Brook. Tom, I've forgotten his last name. He was a rear gunner. And I don't know roughly where, I've not heard from him. And then Don was the navigator, Don Whittaker. He has since passed away, of course, but he was a very nice fellow. He lived very close to me. And I used to visit, and during the war he ran a small car, actually, and he used to pick me up at Stockport and take me down. We used to sleep halfway, and about 5 o'clock in the morning, there used to be a knock on the window. It was the land girls going on duty, and they used to wake us up so we could continue the journey. And that's about it. Thank you.